a special episode of AU Manufacturing Conversations with Brent Belinsky, featuring one of the companies we're putting forward as part of our quest to identify and celebrate Australia's 50 most innovative manufacturers for 2024. This campaign has been made possible through the generous support of MYOB, the original business management software developers. Nothing beats the OG. As well as the CSIRO and the New South Wales Government's Advanced Manufacturing Research Facility. Faz, thank you very much for joining us here on AU Manufacturing Conversations. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you, Brent.
A pleasure. Shame it's taken so long. You're a longtime member of our community, but better late than never, as they say. Let's get started by the standard introductory question, and that is, how did you get here and what do you make?
So we're a family business that specializes in manufacturing. We have about 100 people in WA. We have a few different parts to the company, one being Arvish, which is machining, fabrication for others in mining, oil and gas. Then we also do investment casting and sand casting and pressure die casting. Then we have a window glazing business, which is just making doors and windows for people around Australia, a couple of the main few systems we work with. Then we have Afrodan Plastics, which is injection molding, 3D printing. We have about 12 3D printers in WA. We also make our own tools. Then we've got Rhino, which is commercial washroom fit outs, end of trips, so lockers, bike stands, things like that. And then just recently, we were lucky enough to get a grant to recycle paper into pulp paper products, such as, you know, your coffee cup tray or your egg cartons and those kind of pulp products, which is basically a sustainable packaging sort of initiative by us. And then we also run an overarching brand, which is Idea to Life, which is we do the full product design because we are manufacturers and we're so diverse. So we do the design, prototyping, to full-scale manufacturing.
I'd love to come back to the recycling business, and I'm sure we'll later. But for now, I'd like to hear from you about you as a person. Was it always going to be you getting into the family business after you finished school, or did you go and do something else? Something about that, please. And what did you train as when you were growing up?
So I actually studied to be a pilot initially. I did aviation. And then at the time I finished, September 11th happened. So there was not a lot of jobs for pilots because, if you remember, ANSAT had collapsed. So at that time I started working ground staff, and then I jumped to cabin crew for Emirates. I did that for a while, but then I realized what aviation was about, the good bits and the bad bits. But at that time I wanted to come back and sort of get more into engineering. So I came back into a sort of mid-level position in the business and studied my engineering at the same time, and then sort of expanded from there.
You mentioned about 100 people at Adash. Tell me sort of a little bit about the kind of disciplines that make up the company and what goes on there.
We have definitely mechanical engineers, machinists, tool makers, industrial designers, civil engineers. We have people that have experience in simulations, so CFD specialists. Then we also have some electrical engineers. We have quite a few project engineers. So it's quite a variety. When I say engineers, I also refer to trades as an engineer. I think a lot of people undervalue some of the trades, and that's what was highlighted during the pandemic, is the actual manufacturing. And I'm sure AU Manufacturing has heard Elon Musk and all these famous people say, yeah, people always undervalue that part. That's some of the hardest bit to get right. You know, people always talk about the smiley curve and saying manufacturing right at the bottom, but in amount of effort and technical difficulties, I would inverse the smiley curve, put it that way. That's the most critical bit to make the same product repeatability within tolerance.
Yeah, I mean, you can make the machine, but you mentioned Elon Musk said making the machine that makes the machine, that's the really hard bit, and being able to do what you do over and over again reliably and without 1,000 recalls.
Exactly. So, yeah. So, like I say, I'm glad that you guys promote manufacturing. I would say we foremost are manufacturing engineers, and that's what we like to excel in. And I think Australia has a lot of potential.
Certainly. And so that's a little about you. Tell me about your customers. You mentioned earlier about industries such as mining, oil and gas. Obviously, you're out in Perth, so you're going to be attached to that in some way.
If I focus in on Ardush and Aphrodite, it's mainly, I would say, mining and oil and gas would be our major focus. Then, of course, we do branch out a bit into medical or the med tech sector and also consumer products and automotive. So we do have a bit that we play around there. Of course, in the other businesses, it's mainly around construction and construction of new projects. So that's a bit of a...
So we're talking, as it's once again our Australia's 50 Most Innovative Manufacturers campaign, and you guys were one of the standout nominees last year, just outside of the top 10, and hopefully you'll find the time to apply again and be a part. But for the purposes of this, I'd love to hear your personal definition of innovation, please.
The definition of innovation, I think it's in our email signature these days. Great ideas flourish when collaboration and innovation intersect, because someone might have an idea and we might know how to make it, but you need that cross conversation. You need that collaboration with the end user. You need to do all of that to make a truly great innovative product. And that is where we cannot work without the inventors, and the inventors, we like helping them achieve their dreams. People think they invent one product and they can attain sales. It's not that. It's a circular sort of process. You innovate, you hear more from different customers, you make a better product, or you diversify, you make 2-3 products. And that's what we've been on the journey with a lot of different innovators.
And sort of similarly related to that, I suppose, is as a business leader, you seem to be quite, I guess, sociable and quite willing to network and go to events. AMGC mentioned the other day that you're at their Perth event and they spoke of you quite warmly and your ability to deal with the crowd and speak with manufacturers and be informative. And not everyone is so outgoing, and that's fine, but I would submit that it's important to get out of the office. Tell me about your reasons for getting out and meeting folks in the industry and all that stuff.
Say I'm very fortunate to be able to go and network and meet peers, because these conversations are important to understand what's going on in industry and also what new possibilities may arise. You know, just by having conversations, I understand it's not possible for everyone, and I do really appreciate the position I'm in, but I would highly recommend it to people, because when you're out there, when you're meeting different people, you learn new things and you form new connections, which can help you elevate your process or your product or your design.
We'd like to take another moment now to acknowledge our sponsors, MYOB, as well as the CSIRO and the New South Wales Government's Advanced Manufacturing Research Facility. There would be no 50 Most Innovative without these guys. Thanks again for making this campaign possible. We, I guess, foreshadowed earlier, we'll switch now to the fibre division of your company. Tell me about your decision to get into pulp and recycling, and what drew you into that part of the industry?
Like I said, I was lucky enough to get a grant to take waste paper and make pulp products. I do think it's important that we as Australians don't just send our waste problem overseas. We need to look at that as a resource, just as we want to add value to iron ore and things like that. We need to look at our resource and try and add value within the country. If it's just sorted and goes off overseas, we actually buy back. So most of the cartons in Western Australia are some other country's waste paper that we're buying back as a carton, or be it a coffee cup. Now, these consumable products, if we keep importing them, and we saw the issue during COVID, when shipping came to a standstill, it brings the country to a standstill. So I think it's absolutely critical that we make our own medical consumables on this island, because we are an island. And WA, being an extreme end of the island, it was highlighted the most in WA.
I know that you have some strong thoughts on procurement, and I think it's a pretty important and sometimes not adequately addressed issue within manufacturing. Tell me about where you're coming from and how you think procurement could be used to create activity and new businesses and other associated benefits?
I've been a big advocate of this, and I will continue to be, because I believe once you make version one, you can make version two, three, and improve the product. But to make version one, you need some commitment. You can't just go make a product or make a product and have no orders. The government does a lot of procurement, right? Perfect example with the medical bowls. Now, if I hadn't got the grant and I wasn't lucky enough to get the grant, why would I invest in all that investment to make a factory to possibly align with the tender timing to then possibly sit on a panel and maybe supply with no guaranteed volume? It just all doesn't, you know, the logical step would be you quote on it or you fulfill the tender, then the government works with you to set that facility up locally to be able to make that product locally. I understand that the costs are higher, yet it's, you know, it's not beneficial to Australia. But when the cost is the same, that's the process that should be followed, is you tender for it. If you're lucky enough to win the tender, then you work to a timeline where you can achieve, and some volume is guaranteed. So you're not setting up a factory or a multi-million dollar investment and the government doesn't buy off you, or they do, but you're just on a panel, so you're not guaranteed any volumes.
That might have answered some of the question, but I'm sure you can think of other things that you might consider to be a hobby horse, I guess. One of the standard questions we have as part of the series is, what's an issue within manufacturing that isn't getting the attention it deserves? If you'd like to continue on that note, please.
Yeah, again, the importance of manufacturing was highlighted during COVID, right? And I've mentioned it a couple of times. A couple of years have gone past. What has changed? What are the big picture sort of changes in policy that are actually affecting people down on the ground? I'm yet to see that. I do feel that the people want it. The people of Australia would love to have more manufactured here. It can be done using automation and robotics. Not everything can be made here, but certainly the things that can be made here that are at the same price. I think the government should lead by example and try and procure those things, especially in the health sector, because they are the biggest buyer. It's not like a coffee cup you're selling to everyone. If you're talking about a medical product, a knee joint, or, you know, it can even be a simple thing as a pad or a bowl that they use as a consumable product. Now, those things are used by the government hospitals and they are the biggest consumers. So why aren't they looking at, for the next pandemic or before, what can be made here and create those industries locally so that grows the pie?
And you mentioned robotics there earlier. You've invested in some collaborative robots, I understand. Tell me about the benefit of doing so and if you've found many uses for them, because a lot of manufacturers, cobots aren't the most expensive thing in the world, but there's always the danger that you buy something and it only has a limited applicability. Tell me about your experience.
I couldn't disagree with the comments you said. Some manufacturers will find it useful and some won't. And it's all to do with volume. When you have the volume, yes, you can automate. I was lucky enough to be at EMO recently, and after the third person I spoke to about automating some of the CNCs, I realized I was saying, I do small to medium volume. And the third person sort of said, so you mean you do 500 to 1,000? I went, no, that would be large for Western Australia. I went, oh, so you do micro to small. I said, yes, I do micro to small volume. The key is, you know, when we say volume, I mean thousands off, and that's the sort of volume you can achieve in consumables. So that's where I think the collaborative robots come in handy. If you are doing things in the mining and oil and gas where it's just small to micro volume, I think we have to be more innovative with that. Robots, there are other ways to be innovative that can help.
All right. Well, Faz, it was a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for making the time, and yeah, we'll speak again soon.
Thank you, Brent.